Get to Old Navy for Star Spangled Style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Marco, before we begin, if I could get you very quickly just to introduce yourself and what you do. Hello, my name is, and the like.
Absolutely. My name is Margot Lee Shetterly, and I am the author of the book Hidden Figures.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan, and joining me today is the amazing Margot Lee Shetterly. She is the author of the book that inspired the movie Hidden Figures, that incredible story about the little-known African-American women who were the human computers that helped put the Americans into space.
You know what we're doing here? We're putting a human on top of a missile, shooting into space, and it's never been done before. I need a mathematician that can look beyond the numbers. Math that doesn't yet exist. Before the Russians plant a flag on the damn moon.
You have someone? Running toward our plans. Catherine's the gal for that. She can handle any numbers you put in front of her. Don't embarrass me.
This wasn't empty last night.
So, Margot, before we begin, before we talk about the book, tell me what it felt like waking up on January 9th and finding out that a movie based on a book that you wrote had beaten Star Wars to become the number one movie in America.
That was a pretty exciting moment. Pretty unbelievable. It's just, you know, the thing about Hidden Figures is that every time I thought it couldn't outdo itself, it somehow finds a way to do that. And, you know, it was just amazing. And I think, you know, it's one thing to have the story in a galaxy far, far away. And it's another thing to have a story that really happened right here on our own planet and in my hometown of Hampton, Virginia in the United States. So I'm just thrilled that people have caught the spirit of these women and the adventure and the times that they lived in, and to boost the movie in that fashion.
You know, when I was 8 years old, my parents took me to Cape Canaveral, and there really was no turning back for me. I swear to God, I've spent the last 28 years of my life devouring anything and everything I could find about man's journey into space. And yet, I've never, ever come upon this story. Why, Margot, why haven't I come upon this story before?
You know, that is such a good question. I would say it's probably the question that I get more than any other with respect to this story. You know, I think it's a double-edged sword. You know, some of the obvious reasons are that the Black women were literally hidden in a segregated office. You know, they were much less visible than the other people there. This was considered women's work, so it was devalued. You know, the men did the engineering and the women did the math, and it was not valued the same way. You know, certainly those are huge reasons why this story hasn't been told before. But, you know, there's also a silver lining to it, and that is that these women were also ordinary people. You know, they did extraordinary things. They were brilliant, talented, all of those things. But they were also mothers. They were, you know, they went to the PTA meetings and helped their kids with calculus homework. They did all of the ordinary things that people did. And so I, growing up in Hampton, Virginia, I knew they worked at NASA, but I got to see that ordinary part of them as well. So for me, which was really wonderful, I knew that becoming a scientist or a mathematician, someone who worked at NASA, was in reach because those women did it. You know, it was something that I knew that if I wanted to do that, I could also do it. So there's a, you know, a silver lining to that story as well.
I love how you begin your book with this notion of your growing up being surrounded by African-American scientists, so much so that you believe that it was just what Black people did. And I was wondering if that was part of the reason why this story took such a long time to be told, in that our progress somehow made us forget the importance of retelling these stories.
I think that 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 is perhaps one of the aspects of it. You know, we were very fortunate in that community to normalize those people. We, you know, they were not this image of the scientist like an Einstein who goes and sits on the mountaintop and doesn't interact with other people. They were really a part of that community. And there were other people in that community who were also, you know, the same as these women, striving for the American dream, who got up every day and went to work, whether they were, like my mother was an English professor. There were lots of people who worked at, you know, military installations, because it's a very military-oriented place. They did normal things, and you know, we had a normalized a lot of that. So I think there's a lot to what you're saying as to, you know, why we also haven't heard about them before.
So I watched The Right Stuff before going in to see Hidden Figures. It's one of my favorite films. And there's this common misperception that the reason you only see men in these movies is because there were only men doing these jobs. And of course, that is entirely untrue. Women and women of all colors were everywhere in NASA. And that's something your book makes very apparent.
Yeah, I really hope that after, you know, after Hidden Figures, that we won't look at The Right Stuff or Apollo 13 or any of these other space movies, all of which I love too. I love those movies. We won't see them the same way because, you know, just as ubiquitous as our electronic computers are, you know, we can't do anything without our computers. We can't make toast in the morning these days without your computer, you know, and calculating electronic calculators. These women were that for aeronautics and for the space program. The work didn't get done without them. They were the ones doing the calculating. So, you know, even though we didn't see them on screen in Apollo 13 and The Right Stuff, now people are going to know who's sitting in the classroom, you know, in the rooms doing the calculating.
In the beginning of your book, you tell us about how you came upon the story about your dad and the work he did, about meeting these remarkable women. Tell me that story and tell me about the moment you realized that you absolutely needed to write this book.
Yeah, so it's interesting that in this book about women, the people who really provided the spark were the two most important men in my life, who were my father and my husband. And so my husband and I were home visiting my parents for Christmas a few years ago, 2010. And we ran into a woman who had worked out at NASA, and you know, my dad was talking about her, somebody that, you know, we'd known for a long time at church, and he was talking about the work that she did, and that turned into a more general conversation of what many of the other women had done, including Katherine Johnson. And my husband, who is not from Virginia, was listening to these stories, and you know, and me, who had grown up hearing some of these stories or half hearing them, you know, the way kids listen to their parents. My husband was like, I can't believe I've never heard this story. So the same thing you said, and that a lot of people have said. And for me, it was a moment, a flash of saying, I am here from Hampton, Virginia. I know these women. And I don't know the story. Why are they here? Why are there so many women? Why are there so many Black women? What was Katherine Johnson doing, you know, that she calculated the launch window for the astronauts? And so that day really sparked a curiosity to find out, you know, and to unravel something that I'd taken for granted. Once I started interviewing and, you know, talking to the women and their children, the people they've worked with, I was just hooked.
And of course, you kept discovering more and more women who were involved in this process. And how did you decide whose story to tell? Because the biggest difference between the movie and your book are conflations of both time and people, which I can understand given the constraints of film. But how did you decide who your heroes were going to be?
Yeah, you know, that really was a challenge, because one of the most exciting and surprising things to me was how many women were doing this job, you know, Black and white, all backgrounds. This was women's work. There were, you know, hundreds of women, perhaps more than 1,000, doing this work at NASA at mid-century. So it was a challenge because there were a lot of good stories. But what I really wanted was to use the protagonist to tell not just the story of NASA, but other stories, such as push to desegregate America's public schools. A lot of other stories there, the changes that happened during World War II and during the Cold War. So the protagonists that I picked, their lives intersected those other secondary narratives in some way. And the other thing is I wanted women who finished their careers at the NASA Langley Research Center. I wanted to see where they started and where they ended. So that was really how I chose Dorothy, Mary, Catherine, and Christine.
And how difficult was it to dig up the details? I'm assuming NASA keeps some pretty incredible records.
Thank you. NASA, it really, from the very beginning, and even before it was NASA, even when it was the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics and they were working on airplanes, the agency always really did have a sense of its own mission and of its own, you know, heritage. And they did an exceptional job keeping records, telephone books, photos, all of those things I made very good use of. Then a lot of it was oral history. You know, fortunately, Katherine Johnson is still with us, and she has very graciously shared, you know, a lot of her time and her stories with me. People's families, you know, engineers that worked there and worked with these women, the Black newspapers. So there are a number of African-American newspapers, principal among them, one called the Norfolk Journal and Guide, which really recorded a lot of the quotidian details of these women's lives. So the wedding announcements, the children's Halloween parties, things like that I found in those newspapers. So, you know, the thing is, the details of these women and their lives were right there, you know, in plain sight. It's just they were scattered all over the place. And it was a matter of connecting the dots and putting them all together in one narrative.
We all gonna end up unemployed riding around in this pile of junk.
You're welcome to walk the 16 mile
or sit in the back of the bus. Like
you have identification on
NASA, sir.
NASA?
I had no idea they hired.
There are quite a few women working in the space program.
Least I can do is give y'all an escort.
Three Negro women are chasing a white police officer down the highway in 1961. That is a God-ordained miracle.
And I think that was one of the most remarkable things that the movie did, in that it managed to set up these complex issues very, very quickly. Like NASA's mission, for example, from the very beginning of the film, when that cop pulls them over, and when he finds out they're working at Langley in Virginia, he suddenly has this immediate respect for them via NASA. And I think that was done very astutely and very quickly, and it set the scene incredibly well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was a scene that was created for the film, but I think it does that, you know, the director Ted Melfi and the screenwriter Allison Schroeder, they knew they only had a very short period of time to establish the situation, the women, the whole thing. And I thought they did a great job in that moment, you know, and it really, you know, it's one of these things where it talks about what was at stake and also how people are, you know, when they were just random Black women broken down on the side of the road. Well, they were subject to, you know, the treatment that we, you know, kind of fear there. And once the cop says, hey, we're all on the same side of this and we've got a common enemy in the Russians, all of a sudden they get the police escort to work so that, you know, the people who are keeping our country safe can do their job. So I think it's a really very smart way to start the movie.
And it was necessary as well, because it's been many years since Apollo 13, and I think it's even longer since we've had a real connection with the space program, or at least the public has had that kind of sense of ownership over the space program. So it seems like they need reminding once again.
I think they do. You know, history slips into the past very quickly, and we become very obsessed with what is happening today, and we forget the connection between today and what happened yesterday and what happened 50 years ago. So I think that's one of the reasons why the story is so resonant. We're asking a lot of the same questions about race, about gender, about space, you know, except now it's Mars, not just the moon, about what it means to be American, about America's role in the global, political structure. All of those things are very hot button issues, even the relationship with the Russians. You know, that's something that's come back again. You know, I think for any number of reasons, there's so many touch points in this film that are resonating with people today.
And speaking about race and gender, I think that was probably some of the most difficult stuff to watch on screen, because they speak of race and gender throughout the movie in such a nonchalant way that we're not used to in the 21st century, at least, that you're not sure what's okay and what's not. And it's incredibly jarring in a good way.
Yeah, it was really important for me, both in the book and in, you know, in the movie. And I, you know, they hired me as a consultant and executive producer, so I got some input into the movie. It was incredibly important for me to show, you know, to make the racism and the sexism and the blind spots real, you know, the way most people experience it, and not let anyone off the hook by saying, oh, that's a cross-burning racist there. No, I mean, this is pedestrian racism. Like, if you, you know, you automatically assume that the person who's going to be the right person to do the calculations is actually there to empty the trash. Well, that's what happens. You know, that's how a lot, you know, a lot of us experience those things. And so it was really important for me to make it as it was lived, you know, to not spare any punches. And also, you know, to say, listen, this isn't, you know, it's, I think it's easy to condemn racism when it's the kind of cross-burning racism that people think of. But it's to say that, you know, we need to condemn this as well, you know, that these low expectations and these, you know, these blind spots and these beliefs that about who can be a scientist or an engineer or whatever, those have to be examined as well. And so I that was what I wanted in the book. And I think that they achieved that as well in the movie.
Your book, this movie, now more than ever, in the age of Donald Trump, feels so much more necessary, doesn't it? It feels almost essential.
Well, you know, one of the things that I believe is that the great gift, one among the many great gifts that African Americans have given to America, and then by extension to the world, is the demand that our country, which has a set of beautiful founding ideals, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of justice, you know, liberty and justice for all, these are beautiful ideals, but they have to be pushed. You know, we have to demand that our country live up to them. Black Americans did that over and over, you know, from the time the first Africans were brought to the United States. That has been one of the roles, the guardian of those principles, fiercely guarding them and pushing them, has been the role of African Americans. And I think that's what we're seeing again today, you know, that we are entering a period where it feels like those ideals are under assault again. And we are seeing people take a page from the past and to protect that, you know, and protect, you know, not just African Americans, but immigrants, you know, LGBTQ people, and say, you know, this is the American way, liberty and justice for all of our citizens. The March on Washington, that was organized by A. Philip Randolph, labor leader A. Philip Randolph during World War II, that actually never happened, that provided the template for Martin Luther King's March on Washington, that in turn provided the template for the Women's March on Washington and all of the marches that happened, not just in the United States, but around the world. So I really believe that there's so much about these women, their courage, their talent, their circumstances that speak to us very loudly today.
And you know what else I'm hoping? Almost every scientist I know grew up being inspired by something in popular culture, from fiction. You know, they grew up with posters of Spock and Doctor Who on their walls. And I'm hoping that there's a generation of geek girls and boys who will grow up with pictures of these remarkable women on their walls.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be great.
I totally agree with that. That would be great. No, there's such a connection between science and pop culture. You're right. And Star Wars and, you know, all of these things. So I really hope that these women are standing there right alongside all of those other inspirations, you know, in the minds of the next generation.
And Margot, one last thing. I read your book after I watched the movie, and now I feel like I need a mini series at least, something on Netflix. I mean, there's so much more.
I agree with you. And honestly, my dream is that maybe there could be a mini series or something, but starting in World War II, because I, you know, that's where the story starts. There's so much history that happened that delivered us to the 1960s. You know, I was fascinated. I learned so many things during doing that research. So, you know, my fingers are crossed too.
But also, the movie's fantastic. And don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it a great deal, but it's still fiction, and it isn't a documentary. And I think you could use some expounding upon.
I totally agree. You know, you have a certain amount of time to tell a story in a movie. You know, you've got 2 hours, essentially, and when you can really just delve so deeply in a series, and I think that's why television has become so popular. So I agree with you. If that were able to happen, I would be just absolutely thrilled.
Sign me up. I'll be there with bells on. Margot, thank you so much for your time today.
It was my pleasure. I hope we can do this again.
That was Margot Lee Shetterly. You can find a copy of Hidden Figures at all good bookstores. The movie opens in Malaysia next Thursday. That's the 23rd of February. I strongly urge you to go check it out. I'm going to play you out now with a little something from the Hidden Figures soundtrack. It's called Surrender, and it's by Lala Hathaway and Pharrell Williams. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.